All right, all right, all right. Happy Friday, everyone. All right, all right, all right. Happy Friday, everyone. We made it through another week. I want to say welcome to
Hello.
Okay. And Reverend Harris, are you with us?
Yes, I am. I'm here. I'm here.
Okay.
I'm here.
All right. All right. All right. All right. All right. We got the man himself, everybody. And please forgive me for the glitch. That was probably not his fault, but my fault. I'm new running the board. Reverend Harris, I was just sharing with everybody a little bit of information about the Poor People's Campaign and addressing the problem of homelessness in Fresno. I was wondering if you could share with our listeners the work that you're doing with the Poor People's Campaign right now and a little bit about the event that's going on tomorrow.
Yeah, thank you for having me on tonight. We really appreciate you running the board. You're doing a real good job with that. Real good job giving me a little break. Appreciate coming on as a guest instead of the host, and let
but
someone else
show,
let
y'all.
You be up under the fire. But
I'm just
yeah,
a sidekick,
I just
y'all.
Want to give a shout out to all of the freedom fighters across the country, across the world. Shout out to all of our ancestors who. Political prisoners are still in prison, incarcerated. I just want to thank all of the Black Panther Party and Huey P. Newton and Bobby Seale and Angela Davis and everybody who, Elvis Cleaver and the Nation of Islam and, you know, the list goes on. Fannie Lou Hamer, Shirley Chisholm, you know, all those folks who are ancestors in Black Wall Street who fought the enemy back, the racist white Ku Klux Klan that was working with the U.S. government to destroy our community in 1921. To all of our ancestors who built communities coming out of slavery, World War I, World War II, that went and built cities with blood, sweat, and tears. I want to give a shout out to all of them and let them know that we appreciate them and that we're not going to let their all the work they did go into vain. I believe now the baton has been passed to us today. I believe the baton is with us today. I believe our ancestors live in our spirit. I believe that our ancestors have laid the blueprint for us to rebuild our community, to be in bondage for 400 years in this country is too long. And it's just, you know, it's Black History Month. Those who know, I've been posting inventions on my Facebook, playing documentaries of Fannie Lou Hamer and Malcolm X and just different people, Martin Luther King. And it's just, you know, it's just an honor for me to do that. And just the response that I've been getting from people appreciating me posting Hidden Colors and all of the knowledge that, you know, folks are saying, who is that? You know, what documentary is that? And people are going back after my show that I show on my Facebook. And so, you know, Dr. Harris, Black Lives Matter, open mic night, you know, folks can call in and talk about whatever they want to talk about, you know, good, bad, or indifferent. I just think that we have to open up a dialogue right now. We have to have a conversation. We have to have a moral conversation. And that brings me into the Poor People's Campaign. The Poor People's Campaign is something that Dr. King has started before he got assassinated. Dr. King was one of the best organizers we ever had in the history of Black folk. Dr. King had a vision. He was a young man, but God used him as a vessel, as a tool to go out into the vineyard, out where the wolves are at. And tried to save his people. It reminds you of the children of Israel. You know, We keep saying Pharaoh, let our people go, but we need to tell our people to let Pharaoh go. And so a lot of our people are brainwashed today. A lot of our people are scared. A lot of our, some of our people have sold out. Some of our people just don't care. But the Poor People's Campaign is a campaign that deals with a moral obligation to stand for what's right, to stand for justice, to stand for liberation here in this country. And when we look at this country, and especially Fresno right now, you know, many know me, and I renamed the city to Mississippi Fresno. Now, I named it Mississippi for a reason, because of the conditions of how poor people are being treated here. You know, Fresno received this All-American Award. You probably remember about 10 years ago. I believe they received two All-American awards.
Yes, they did.
Black
they
people
did.
Was in a bad condition then, and we're in a worse condition now.
Yep.
And so, you
That's
know, we're
right.
the forgotten ones right now as black people in this city. And I think it's people like yourself, myself, you know, Marie Else, different people that are stepping up to the plate right now, calling a spade, being unapologetic about the conditions of our people and who's responsible for that. And the Poor People's Campaign is a campaign, is really a campaign of moral obligation.
It's
a campaign to tell people that they are somebody. And because they are somebody, that they have a right to be at the table. They have a right to fresh water. They have a right to fresh air. They have a right to a living wage. They have a right not to be profiled. They have a right to have food that's not poisoned here in this country.
That's right.
So, you know, we're organizing across the country right now. Reverend Barber on the East Coast is our leader. He has blew the bugle. And tomorrow here in Fresno, California, better known as Mississippi Fresno, we'll be having our statewide organizing committee. We have organizers from San Diego, L.A., San Francisco, Oakland, Hayward, Sacramento, Merced, Fresno. And it's going to be a very powerful this is the second time that we've had this statewide committee here from the east, from the north and from the south. People are going to be occupying the Freedom Center tomorrow. And so for us at the Freedom School, it's just an honor to host all of the good people that are fighting a good fight all over California, and those who are not scared.
Yeah.
Those, you know, you went with me, you and your mom. Your mom was 100 years old. She went up there with me to Sacramento to march in the streets, and I have pictures of that.
That was powerful
you
stuff.
Going with me and Maria, and you know, we were representing Fresno, and you know, it's just right now. It's a time for people to stand up and fight back. You know, stand up and fight back. You know, if I was in church, I would tell people to repeat after me: stand up and fight back, because you have to stand up in order to fight back. Dr. King said, "A man can't ride your back if you're standing up, but you can ride your back
That's
if you're bending over." So bending over days is over with right now. You know, Rosa Parks said the same thing. I'm not going to the back. And Rosa Parks had backbone when she said that, and she meant that. I'm not getting up to go to the back of the bus and to be treated like a second-class citizen. And so when we look at the U.S. Constitution, Aline, we will see that the U.S. Constitution has never been our friend as black people. It was the same U.S. Constitution that says that black people was 3/5 of a human being. That was written in the U.S. Constitution. We remember the Jim Crow era. We remember the black codes. We remember all that stuff. I mean, you're a historian. You know what I'm talking about. And but we have to take that information and share it with our children. We need, you know, to get our children away from the Xbox and the robot. And Atari and all that type of stuff.
Exactly, those electronic babysitters.
And say, hey, this is Fannie Lou Hamer. This is what this woman stood for.
Yes.
Fannie Lou Hamer, she was able to organize to buy 600 acres of land to put 60 homes out there for poor folks. Fannie Lou Hamer organized, the same woman that was beaten in a cell that made racist cops made
tortured.
A black brother beat her till her legs was just numb. All because she stood up as a black woman. We have to do a better job in making our kids listen, not asking our kids, but making our kids listen.
Right.
Because if we don't make our, if we don't take the time out right now, Starlene, I'm 48 years old, and you know how hard I work from sun up to sundown.
I do.
Trying to build an institution called a freedom school that Fannie Lou Hamer had the freedom form. And,
that's right.
And it
that's
was the
right.
same concept, you know, do for self or be a slave. And I think
do
that, you
self.
Know, as people walk around not wanting to work with me and, you know, whatever their reasons are, which is ridiculous reasons, I'm about my people's business, you know, and I want to see
well,
our people.
Well, and people who know
liberated.
You know that.
I want to see our people with
yeah.
jobs. I want to see our people be entrepreneurs. I want to see our people own houses. I want to see our people own land. I want to see our people have good credit. I want to see, you know, this is what Black
exactly.
Wall Street was about. And so the Poor People's Campaign is a movement right now. I wouldn't
mm-hmm.
say it's underground because we're on top of the ground because we're hitting the pavement.
Right.
You know, people went to
right.
jail in Sacramento for doing disobedience. We occupied the
right.
governor's office with the sheriffs right there with their guns on.
That was powerful.
You know, it was women and children who were there who believed in what we were doing down there. I was down there with
right.
my robe on, and I was just hugging everybody. You had
yeah.
Native Americans there. You had
yeah.
whites. You had black. You had children. You had
everybody.
All different creed that was there. Gay folks,
exactly.
non-gay folks, different, you know, religion people, you know, people with different doctrine came together. They didn't care about what you baptized
right.
in. They knew that we had
right.
a moral obligation as clergy to stand for the people. And,
a moral obligation.
So that's what this is about tomorrow. And, you know, we Fresno is representing tomorrow. We're coming in with our people. We're coming in with our committee. We're going to let the state of California know that even though we're the 10th worst city for black people to live in, that we have people at the table now that see that, recognize
Absolutely.
That, and we're ready to hit the pavement.
Absolutely.
We understand that Fresno has the highest concentration of poverty, and, you know,
yes.
we understand that. We see that. We're dissecting
yes.
that, and we're organizing around that. There's no sellouts. You know, there would be nobody
yeah.
around me at my table that are sellouts because I'm not a sellout. You can't buy
right.
me. You can't purchase me. There's no clearance tag on me. And I say that for the people that sits around me, you know, because, and I mean that, you know.
Yes,
you don't
I'm
have enough
forever
money
because
in
I know
boat.
You so well. I
don't have enough
absolutely.
Money.
I'm chuckling because I know you. You know, let me just say this, people. If you want to be part of history, because remember, Reverend Harris has already outlined for you that this Poor People's Campaign was one of the last movements that MLK started before his death. And I was, just before you came on, Reverend, I was sharing with people of a certain age, if they remember, the tent city that was constructed in Washington, D.C., and the scores of people who were living there to illustrate what poverty looks like for those Washingtonians and the person in the White House. Now, Dr. King was brilliant, as you say, about painting a picture for people. And so now it is time for us to take up the mantle and go forward with it. Just before you came on, I was sharing and asking people, making a connection between this Poor People's Campaign and homelessness in Fresno. And I was asking the question about is there money well spent, the city of Fresno, giving money to the police and asking them to solve homelessness? You know, and that's like asking the fox to watch the hen house. You cannot expect good results from people whose job it is to shoo people away, you know, like their livestock. So we have to understand as black people, even if we have disagreements, we cannot walk away from the table. We cannot afford to lose anybody in this fight. We cannot afford to disagree with somebody so much that you cannot work with them. One thing I've learned about you, Reverend, and I think I'm accurate in this, that you are willing to sit down, have a conversation with anybody. I'm not saying compromise, I said have a conversation and try to find some common ground. This is what black people are going to have to do now. We are at a tipping point in history. While 45 in the White House is all making all these distractions before he goes to jail about this barrier wall to keep out brown people from Mexico, this false narrative that he's setting up. In the meantime, the rest of us are out here dying. We're out here dying. Our communities are dying. That means there will be nothing left for our children and our grandchildren. So when you invest in your community, you're investing in yourself. And black people need to understand that we cannot afford to be complacent. And that's one of the reasons why groups like the West Fresno Democratic Club, Fresno Freedom School, we teach to love each other, to love yourself, to expect the best from yourself, excellence. That's what we try to give our children. But the Poor People Campaign means that we want everybody. It doesn't matter what color you are. If you have the will to come and serve, then come on out to Freedom Center tomorrow and be part of this movement. So let me get off my soapbox, Rev, and throw it back to you so that you can explain why it's so important for this movement to happen in Fresno. Mississippi Fresno is ground zero for much of the problems in the black community nationwide. But we're in California especially, we're ground zero, and now the whole country knows that we're the 10th worst city in America for black people.
Well, you know, to bounce off what you're saying right now is very interesting about the 10th worst city for black people to live in. We just left the Brooklyn Institution report that says that 93706 has the highest concentration of poverty. Then we graduate from that to black people living in the 10th worst city in the country. And so we were the only city on the West Coast. All the rest of the cities out of the 10 out of the 20 was on the East Coast. So, but what's really interesting is that we sit in a bread bowl basket called the San Joaquin Valley that feeds over 80% of the country. Someone's perpetrating a fraud, because if the Valley is making $60 billion a year, and now you're saying that we have the highest concentration of poverty, you would think that some politician from the Board of Supervisors or the Federal City Council, the mayor, would say, hey, wait a minute, what's going on here? We're exporting $60 billion a year gross income, but yet our region here has the highest concentration of poverty. Because the problem is that the educational system here in the San Joaquin Valley is dysfunctional. If you look at Fresno Unified, you have 80% of students who are on public lunches. You have black children who are being expulsion from Fresno Unified. They're supposed to install a restorative justice component with the Fresno Unified, but I don't even believe they did that. So I've sat in expulsion hearings, you know, advocating for children to keep them in school and not expel them, to keep them with good records where they don't have an opportunity to go to college without a jail record. Kids are going to be kids, but the problem in Fresno is that you have people who are politicians who are not making good policy. The problem is that we have politicians here and developers who buy politicians to push their agendas to keep money cycle going on in their little circle. For instance, case in point, when you look at Gaston Elementary, the first middle school that was built in this 93706, where we didn't have to ship our children to another white community school, then it had a white developer come in named Harris Construction, who Fresno Unified did not even put the whole project out to bid. They just gave the contract to Harris Construction. Why? Because Harris Construction was given under table money for campaign money for those who were running for office. That's the game that's being played right here in Fresno.
Right.
And that's why when we had Operation Rezone, you've seen that the feds, the FBI, came in and busted all those developers who was paying politicians to fund their, to vote for their projects. And let it be known, our own black city councilman, Robert Smith, got caught up in it. And he was the only one that went to jail as a black man.
Yes.
But there were several developers who took the deal. But he was the one who didn't want to take the deal. And so he had to do prison time. So when we look at the historical piece of what's going on in West Fresno, you will see that the inconsistent of things that are going on here that has the word injustice on it. When you sit here and we talk about how you can have a packing house selling cooking dead animals every day with the stench going up in the air, coming back down in the community, the lifespan of those of us who live in West Fresno is 20 years less than those living in North Fresno. Did you hear what
That's
I just
right.
said? I want our listening audience to really understand what I'm saying here, because no one is not going to give it to you pure and uncut like I am. The lifespan for those who live in West Fresno is 20 years less than those living
That's
up north
right.
near Wilbur Park People's Church. Why is
That's
that?
Right.
Why would you not think that
That's
those
right.
living up north near People's Church, Woodward Park, would give a damn about those of us living down here in poverty? See, so we perpetrate a fraud. You would think that People's Church, which is one of the biggest evangelical ministries here in Fresno, would be concerned about God's kingdom on the south end of town, versus the kingdom of God on the north end of town. You would think that they would be equal and parallel, but People's Church, they will spend their money going to Mexico. Not saying that the people in Mexico don't need no help and support, but charity starts at home. You take care of
That's
home
right.
first before you go to
That's
another
right.
city or another state. So, you know, this whole city right now is really nothing but hypocrites to me. And it's time for black folk, the black church, black and brown people, and those whites who like-minded parallel with us to stand with us, speak truth to power. And call, I mean, when that's
Reverend Harris, you're completely right.
You're
completely
ridiculous.
Right. And I can't remember who it was who said that the most segregated hour in America is Sunday between 9 and 10 in the morning for church service, when we are separated instead of together. But, you know, when you talk about, let me just do just a short sidebar to what you're saying about the inequality in politics here in Fresno. For example, listeners, Ashley Swearingen, who was the mayor just before Lee Brand, and she left office and founded the Central Valley Foundation. I think that's what it's called, Central Valley Foundation. Now, she is being credited with bringing TCC, SGC money, $70 million to Fresno. Why did she get the $70 million, people? Because of 93706 that she did very little for while she was in office. But she's leaving office, and she helps to bring in this money. She sets up a committee in conjunction with the city of Fresno. Everything's looking good. This money is supposed to help Southwest Fresno. Well, lo and behold, the politics of Fresno once again ruled. That money was already divided up about how they were going to spend it, who this money was going to go to. And smaller voices in the community did not get that money. Larger voices did. And, of course, they go through this dog and pony show where they make it seem like, okay, well, we're having public hearings and all this. The fact of the matter is that Ashley Swearingen and the people sitting around her table are the ones who made the decision. This is not new, people in Fresno. This is how politics works here. These backroom deals, just like Reverend Harris was describing Gaston and that lease back that turned out to be illegal that they did with Gaston. When are we going to stand up and say no more? We have got to put our foot down and say no more. And all of our allies, black and brown and Asian and like-minded whites, are going to have to come together on this and say enough is enough and enough is too much. So when Reverend Harris is talking about Mississippi Fresno, he knows what he's saying. Remember, people, MLK came here in 1964, and he was talking about housing. And lo and behold, we still have a problem with housing in Fresno, only now that includes homelessness. And so we have, people say we have no power. We have the most power in the world if we work as a collective. Our fingers that are spread apart are weak, but fingers together in a fist are strong. This is something that Reverend Harris is always advocating. And so now is the time. You can pick any issue that you want to talk about. You can talk about environmental racism that the Reverend was just talking about with the rendering plant. You can talk about voter suppression and voting rights. You can talk about education. You can talk about police brutality. You can talk about infant mortality and the fact that 20 years, my mother's an anomaly at 100 years old. She should have already been gone, but see, she's a fighter, just like the rest of us are fighters. So, Reverend Harris, I just wanted to put in that sidebar about the way politics works in Fresno and to urge people to get up off the couch, get up from the table, get up from the floor and your front porch, get up and get involved. Because there are people out here moving and trying to get some things done on your behalf, but we cannot do it without you. Cannot do it without you. I'm sorry. That's all I had to say. But I had to say it.
I think you bring a valid point, you know, and I think that, you know, true liberation, true revolutionary has to be done on the sidewalk. I think that the city here, the founding fathers, had an agenda for their children to be in power for many, many years. I believe they have cut off a lot of pastors, which I think that's changing now slowly. I'm seeing some daylight right now. I'm going to watch the pavement. I'm going to watch the flow and see how it goes. And so things may be changing a little bit here in Fresno. I'm seeing new faces on the ground. I'm hearing new conversations. But
that's good. That's positive. Hello?
At the end of the day, we have to understand to do for self or be a slave. And so, you know, I just want to be a good servant, you know, at this time and this hour right now, to let people know that, you know, hey, you have a right to be at the table, you know. And I think that our women need to really step more to the forefront now. You know, many men don't like me saying that. I get it because you're male chauvinist. I understand. But I just feel that many of our women here, in Fresno and across the country in California, I just feel that they need to step to the forefront now because the time is now. Time is now, you know.
This is a tipping point for our country. This is true.
You know.
And I think I'm seeing some movement, especially in the Democratic Party, that here locally, you know, you got a spectrum of moderate Democrats to more conservative Democrats. I think they used to call them blue dog Democrats. And then you go towards the middle, and then you're going to the left with progressive and then ultra progressive. So there's a lot of room for change, and people just have to pick their passion about what they want to get involved with. And, you know, Reverend Harris, we were at a meeting earlier today, and I was saying at that meeting that, you know, we understand that people are busy living their lives. They go to work. If they have children or elders that they're caring for, they have to worry about that. But the need for community is too large to be ignored. You know, we are people, Africans are people that are all about extended family. And when we say it takes a village to raise a child, well, after that child is raised, it takes a whole village to be connected. It's going to take a whole village to care for our elders and our disabled. You know, it's going to take the village to make things better for the whole. If our children are doing as badly as I know they are in school, Reverend, you were just talking about this. Who is going to fight for them if we do not do it? And if they're expelling our children and putting them in the school to prison pipeline, who is going to disrupt that pipeline if we don't do it? This is one of the things, you know, I'm asking the callers to call in about and tell us what you're concerned about. Is it your child that's gotten expelled? Is it your brother or your husband that's gotten pulled over and beaten by police? Did you have somebody in your family that was shot and killed? You know, I'm thinking of people like Tamar Rice, the little 12-year-old. I'm thinking of people like Sandra Bland in Texas who died in police custody. If we do not stand up for ourselves, who else is going to do it for us? The time is now. And we want to hear your voices. So I'm hoping that you will call in tonight, that you'll call in at 619-924-0872. Once again, call in, please, at 619-924-0872. And tell us what you think right now. Tell us what's on your mind about your community and how things are better. If you are one of the freedom fighters that Reverend Harris was talking about, we want to hear what you're doing in the community where you live. We know that this broadcast goes out, you know, nationwide and internationally. So if you're a part of the African diaspora and you are not living in Mississippi, Fresno, tell us what you're doing in your area, in your neck of the woods, to make things better for our people. Because just know we are with you. You are much loved, and we want to hear your voice.
Well, you know, I would like to pose a question to you right now. I was juicing this morning. I don't know if this person is actually listening right now to the show. I hope. And I had mentioned, you know, Black Lives Matter show. And he stated to me, he said, all lives matter. What is your perspective of Black Lives Matter and all lives matter?
And all lives matter. Well, I've heard it said now you have people talking about Blue Lives Matter. And, you know, I don't necessarily take offense, but Black Lives Matter, and the reason that it sticks in people's craw is because we are usually killed and beaten with impunity. Our babies are killed and beaten. All you have to do is think about Tamar Rice and the young ladies in Arlington, Texas, who were going to a pool party and wound up getting stepped on in the back of their, you know, back thrown to the ground in front of their friends. Black Lives Matter started as a response to police brutality, and nobody seemed to care. You know, and so the sisters who started this, the people who started Black Lives Matter, were saying, wait a minute, Black Lives Matter too. And I think that was a response to just, in general, our lives don't matter to white society. You know, we're losing 1 to 2 black people every single day in this country to police brutality. Every day. And so when people tell me that all lives matter, I get upset because we shouldn't have even had to say Black Lives Matter. But it's obviously that to the greater society, they do not. We make up nationally about 12% of the population, but we make up 30 to 40% of the prison population. And why is that? You know, okay, so then you have a problem with black infant mortality and the fact that black mothers are dying at an alarming rate. Some of you might remember when Serena Williams had her baby. This woman is wealthy, and she almost died. Why? Because the doctors, the caregivers in that hospital did not listen to her when she said, I don't feel right. Something is wrong. And she had to keep pressing the point. This is what we're talking about when we say Black Lives Matter. when you go to the doctor and your doctor, when you speak to them, all they hear is blah, 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 blah. You know, it's the same when you go to your child's school and you're explaining your child is, you know, whatever is going on, and the teacher is doodling, you know, on a piece of paper because they're not really listening. They're just killing time. All connecting all these dots has to do with Black Lives Matter. And so the police killing is just the most glaring example. It's the same thing when you go into a department store and you're being followed because they think you're going to steal something. And I know a lot of black people can relate to that. Or if you're racially profiled just driving down the street. And that is for men and women. It used to be predominantly men, but Sandra Bland, and now the sister is dead. So when people say to me, all lives matter, history proves them wrong on that. When Black Wall Street was torched, when the move in Philadelphia, when that house had a bomb dropped on it, and subsequently killed several people and torched other houses. That doesn't happen in white neighborhoods. It does not happen in white neighborhoods. That only happens to black people in America. And so what we're wrestling with, I think, Reverend, is the vestiges of chattel slavery. You have chattel slavery, you have Jim Reconstruction, you have Jim Crow. We have separate but unequal, and now we've got the new Jim Crow. Now there's this big talk about blackface and whether or not that's ever acceptable. If we have to continue to explain to white people what's wrong with their plantation thinking, how far have we really come in this country? So that's my long-winded response to your question. They've proven to us over and over again that black lives do not matter. And what we're standing up saying now is that, yes, they do, and we can't afford to lose anybody. And I'm saying that about the brothers and sisters behind prison walls. I'm saying that to the alcoholics and drug addicts. I'm saying that about the people who are suffering from mental illness and need to take medication and stay on an even keel. We've lost too many already. We can't afford to lose any more.
Well, my perspective of Black Lives Matter, some may agree, some may disagree. And it's okay if you disagree, because that's why this radio show, I created this radio show to have an opportunity to have a conversation. So we have to learn how to agree to a disagree and not leave the table upset and mad and et cetera. One of the things that I see right now is that black lives never mattered in America.
Mm.
When you go from a historical standpoint, and those know me, I don't talk about things without giving a historical basis of a foundation. Black lives matter, never mattered. The lives of black people never mattered in the eyes of white folk, because that's why they put inside of the U.S. Constitution to parallel us with an animal, 3/5 of a human being. So our lives never mattered in the context of the United States of America when it comes to the conversation of do we get the respect? How can you sit here and tell me that our lives matter for 400 years of slavery? How can you tell me that our lives mattered when we were being lynched, hung, town hall rallies, postcards being made, black men being their private parts being cut off, black men legs being tied to one horse going one way and a horse going the other way and pulled apart. How can you tell me our lives mattered when a black woman was impregnated with a baby, a boy or girl, and the plantation master walked up with a big knife and cut the woman baby, cut the woman's stomach, and the baby fell out. He took the heel of his shoe and mashed the baby head. How can you tell me back Black Lives Matter when Black Wall Street was destroyed? How can you tell me Black Lives ever mattered when you had Nat Turner doing his time and era watching white folks rape young black girls? How can you tell me that Black Lives mattered then? And how do you think that we feel that Dr. King's life was taken away? His life didn't even matter. How can you tell me that Emmett Till in Mississippi, that his life mattered when his brains and his ears was cut off and a big hole was in his head? How can you tell me his life mattered when you took out the Black Panther Party, when you shot up the office in Oakland, California? So I hope that person is listening to me right now when he want to say all lives matter. Yes, all lives matter. Our lives should have mattered 400 years ago, but it didn't matter 400 years ago, and it don't matter in 2019. Why? Because we wouldn't have had Oscar Grant being on the ground shot in the back in Oakland, California, if our all lives mattered. We wouldn't have Sandra Bland dead right now if all lives mattered. So, you know, I just have to speak the truth, and I hope this person is listening to me right now. And you're going to tell me all lives matter, because, no, black life never mattered in United Snakes of America, and it doesn't matter today. Because if it did, you would understand that this president 45 who is building this wall up in Mexico, talking about, oh, we got to leave the illegal immigrants out. They're illegal aliens. But at the same time, who's the real illegal in this country? You came from Europe.
Right.
You came and your ancestors came and stole the land from the Native Americans. Then you brought us over here to work on your plantations from sun up to sun down.
Free.
And then you turn around and you made money off our labor and turned around after all the inventions that black folk made. You went and took the blueprint and went and got paid for it, and the actual person that made the invention got nothing. So when you want to talk to me about all lives matter, you better know what you're talking about when you come up to me, or don't come up to me at all.
Yes, yes. Well, it's that guilt, Rev. It is that white guilt that they try to trump, no pun intended, their white privilege and their white supremacy. But the thing about guilt is you're only guilty, you feel guilty when you know you're wrong. If you have no problem accepting what you've already done and acknowledge that wrongdoing, then we wouldn't have to explain this to you. But when people get angry and say all lives matter, that means that you know that there's some wrongdoing involved there. It's just like the whole issue with reparations. They owe black people money. And reparations is not a new movement. People were talking about reparations less than 20 years after the end of Reconstruction. They were talking about reparations. And so if you add up all the interest from 1863 to 2019, that's a hell of a lot of money for the people in this country. And people have to understand, particularly black people have to understand what I'm about to say right now. There is no other population on this earth that experienced the kind of chattel slavery that African Americans experience. And so when you have black people from the United Kingdom, from the West Indies, from South America, who come here and seem to succeed and do well, maybe their narrative is different than ours. And I tell people, think about President Obama. Yes, he was a black man. He married a black woman who was a descendant of slaves. But he himself was not a descendant. He was not a descendant. His father was Kenyan. And I really do believe that's one of the reasons that Obama got elected. Black people have to understand that we didn't begin with chattel slavery and we don't end with chattel slavery. We are Africans, and we had a rich history before we were ever brought to this continent. But after we came to this continent and were brought here, for whatever reason, whether we were stolen or sold by our own people, for whatever reason, we were beaten, brainwashed, raped, and our children, the progeny of our bodies, was born into slavery. So when we looked down the years, down the road, all we saw was bleakness and sorrow and pain. No other group of people in this world has gone through what African Americans in this country have. And they tried, Rev, to do us as bad as they could. If we were a weak people, it wouldn't be none of us here. But we are a strong, resilient people. We are a mighty people. And we've had people like Malcolm and Martin tell us this all along. Louis Farrakhan, Elijah Muhammad, all of these great black men have told us how great we are, but we have to believe it. And not only believe it, then we have to act. We have to act. There is a place for all black hands to do something to lift us up. We have to lift up the sky together. So, my brother, the fact that you are one of the best freedom fighters that I have had the pleasure of knowing, I commend you for your work, for your continued work, and I'm hoping that people are going to join you in the Poor People's Campaign tomorrow. It's getting close to 9 o'clock, but I just want you to say a few words in closing to the people of Mississippi, Fresno, and the rest of the world.
Well, you know, just want to thank everybody for tuning in tonight. Everyone know I'm very passionate when it comes to people, especially my people. We just need workers. We need organizers. We need people who's not going to sell out. We need people who's ready to burn the midnight oil. We need people who's ready to finance the movement, you know, and pass this down to our children, which is so important right now at this time and day and age. You know, we just have to understand, you know, that it's do for self or be a slave. And,
yeah,
you know, it's late in the evening right now. We're in the fourth quarter. You know, we're in the fourth mm-hmm. quarter right now. And if we don't make this happen right now for our children, it's not going to ever happen. And so in yeah. one sense, you know, I say thank God for Donald Trump. And I want to put it in the right context when I say that. Because, see, many people never thought that the U.S. government would be shut down by a president. They never thought that in a million years. And it's one thing that Donald Trump has done to America. He has made people who never thought that they would work together or talk together start talking because
mm-hmm.
it's affecting their bottom line. The people who are laid
sure.
off in the federal government never thought that they would have a pink slip to say, oh, you're laid off, okay, because people have been having it so easy, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So in one sense, thank God for Donald Trump in a sense that he made people come together that wouldn't even come together or even have a conversation and say, hey, wait a minute. You know, I thought it was just poor people up under the bridge that's only supposed to be affected.
Right.
Hey, I thought it was just the person that
right.
was pushing the shopping cart that was going to be affected.
Yeah.
But I never thought that my six figures would ever be affected. And so, you know, again, we're at a time right now where we have to start. The motto for the Fresno Freedom School that I founded, we educate, we motivate, we energize, we organize, and we mobilize to take our community to a higher level. If we
yeah.
can do all of those, I believe that what Dr. King set out to do, will come to a reality. What the Black Panther Party did will come to a reality. All the work that Fannie Lou Hamer did and the sacrifice she did will come to the front. And, you know, and it's just, we really have to look. As Michael Jackson said, the man in the mirror, the woman in the mirror. You have to wake up in the morning and say, you know, did I do all I could do yesterday? I don't know if it was John Kennedy or John F. Kennedy, or one of them Kennedy said, it's not what the country can do for you, but what can you do for your country?
That's right.
And I pose that to all the people. I said, what can you do? You know, just because you're not living in a cardboard box, don't put down the person that's living in a cardboard box.
That's right.
Because you don't know what their story is. You don't know what they you don't know what their trials and tribulations are. And we have to stop being so judgmental on people.
Yes.
Because we're all God's people. Some rich,
we are.
Some poor, some have cars, some don't. You know,
some
eat three meals a day, some eat no meals a day. But where's the
That's
compassion?
Right.
Where's the compassion in the heart of the people today? Why is our heart so hard?
Yes.
You know, we got to get away from that. And I charge the people today that if change is going to come, it first starts in you. It first starts in your heart, in your brain.
Yes.
Then we can real change here in America. And so I'm just going to salute everybody, say thank you for tuning in, thank you for listening to me tonight, and we're getting ready for tomorrow, and
we hope to see you there. Alright people, alright, you have heard the voice of Reverend Dr. Floyd D. Harris coming to you from Mississippi Fresno, and we want to see everybody out at the Poor People Campaign at Freedom Center tomorrow at 1106 West Woodward at Channing, New Light for New Life Church. Come out and support your brothers and sisters. All right. Take care, everybody. Happy Friday and peace out.